Welcome back to Camera Conversations with your host, Colin Campbell, and today is episode 238 of the podcast, and it is a return of our roundtable discussions with Chris Burns, the owner of Savage Scholar Consulting, and the founder of MTN, David Hatt. It's been 2 years, and back in episode 117 that we did the format of overrated, underrated. It is pretty self-explanatory, and this time round, we looked at a range of concepts, habits, restaurants, and much more to debate whether they're over or underrated. There is, of course, some controversial opinions in here, but a lot of nuance and discussion as well. And you can expect to hear us discuss marriage, crypto, Star Wars, saunas, nasal breathing, high rocks, and much, much more. If you're new here, make sure you've hit that follow or subscribe button, or you take the time to send this episode to a friend that you think would enjoy this as well. I love every time that I get together with David and Chris. It's definitely the most lighthearted that I can be on the podcast. We really do just let rip, and it was a fantastic hour and a half recording together. Today's podcast is sponsored and supported by Factory Weights. If you're looking to kit out your home gym or just pick up some basic equipment so you can fit a workout into your busy schedule, then Factory Weights have got you covered. They're a company I know really well now since mid-2020, and they provide the highest quality gym equipment at the best possible prices. You can go from getting full gym fit outs to picking up some dumbbells and resistance bands, or just the things that you need to get your workout in. Factory Weights have got you covered for all your training needs. The link will be in the show notes to www.factoryweights.co.uk, and you can get 10% off your order using the code CALL10. Last but not least, before we finish up this podcast, I want to say a massive thank you to everyone that's taken the time to leave the show a rating on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts. We've just burst through the 450 five-star rating mark on Spotify, and it does not go unnoticed, and it really helps as the show continues to grow and progress. At the time of recording, I'm headed out to Dubai next week for more big episodes out there, so please make sure you subscribe because you do not want to miss what I've got in the pipeline. Thanks for your support. The music's going to play, and you've got an hour and a half with myself, David, and Chris. Gents, we're back, and a couple of changes. David, you've got your new house, and probably more importantly, Chris, Mr. Burns is a father. Congratulations.
Thank you. Cheers.
And with that comes a new level of maturity and insight, I'm sure.
Well, I don't know, four weeks in, so I don't know. Maybe. We'll see. We'll see how this episode goes.
Time will tell.
We'll find out. The last time we did overrated, underrated as a format was 2 years ago, and we might revisit some of the stuff that we maybe covered last time around, but all kind of general concepts that we can go in on. And the first of those, to start on a big one, is marriage.
Who's kicking off, Chris?
Well, I'm the only one that's married here, so maybe I should kick off.
I actually forgot about that. On you go.
You forgot that? You were at my wedding all day.
And it was a great wedding. Yeah. Phenomenal wedding, there to be go. Fair.
I think it's overrated.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, because I think that the take I've got on this is people use marriage as a bit of a crutch, like I just need to get married, and they don't really understand what marriage really means and what it stands for. You know, I've got a phenomenal marriage. I couldn't have found a better person to be married to, and that a life partner and everything that goes along with that.
Yeah.
But I think that so many people rush into it, and that's why you probably see so many, like, the divorce rate getting higher and higher and higher.
Yeah.
Because people just rush into anything like, oh, once I'm married, then that's kind of my life set and I'm secure in this. And you're just like, you just marry the wrong person. You know, you just get into a relationship that you just shouldn't be in, and marriage just complicates that massively. Yeah. So I do think it's overrated.
It's like a ticker box, I think, nowadays.
Yeah.
It's like what you do. It's like, that's what I do at the age of between 25 and 35. I think that's like genuinely a thing. Like, people are like, oh, fuck, well, I may as well get married. So, well, do you love the person? Do you want to spend the rest of your life with them? Ah, I'll figure that out later. It's like, oh, that's maybe what you want to, like, fucking work on first.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's the circles we're mixing in, because I'm of the opinion it's underrated, because societally, one, it's declining in terms of number of people getting married, but two, obviously we're getting those failed marriages in terms of divorce rates and all the downstream effects that come from that as well. So I wonder whether it's the echo chambers or parts of society that we are spending time in that we're seeing people habitually get married.
Your parents are both still together?
Yeah, correct.
Ours are both separated.
I come from a broken home.
I don't know, same with dad life, my mum. I wonder if that actually affects, because I think it's overrated too.
But interestingly, you both ended up being raised by
stepdads.
Yeah.
Technically, yeah. For like a lot of, not raised by my stepdad, but nah, definitely, like,
you ended up in a nuclear home again.
To an extent. Yeah. But nah, actually, because nah, I was.
Because your dad.
I was 18 by the time my mum got, like, remarried. So.
All right. See, I grew up with four parents. Yeah. I don't know any different. So I was a bit different there because my mum and dad were never, I've never known them to be together.
Yep.
Mum was 16. My dad and my dad were 16 when I was born. And then, so from when I can remember, my stepmom's been my stepmom, my stepdad's my stepdad. So I've kind of grown up with four parents now. Mm-hmm. So that's been a bit different. And I was at my mum and my stepdad's wedding and my dad and my stepmom's wedding. So I think like what you're saying, I think that the concept of marriage is underrated. But I think getting married,
the implementation of it is
overrated.
It's an expensive piss up, really, isn't it?
Yeah, because I totally agree with you about like
not for you,
not for me, not on folks on it. I totally agree with you about like people don't really see some people don't are kind of poo pooing marriage now. So I think it's not really a big deal anymore. And obviously the breakdown is or the kind of the unit that goes along with it, family units and stuff. Totally agree with that. But I think a lot of people just rush into it and just think it's going to be this like, even you I'm sure we all know people around this table who have been in relationships, you're just like, you two are so wrong for each other,
and then one of them gets
in the next minute
the proposal. Yeah,
you see it, it's Christmas Day and the guy's doing one knee underneath the tree and you're like, oh, here we fucking go. This
they're
is
on that be, fast track lifestyle where it's like, we need to get a mortgage, we'll get a dog and we'll just get married
kids, and then it's this, you know. Yeah,
I also think people are so quick to get divorced nowadays as well though. Like if I look at my dad's parents, fucking hated each other but they stayed married because that was the thing to do. Whereas nowadays, I think people have a bit of a wobble in a marriage or in a relationship in general, and they're like, it's over. And I think that comes down to like options nowadays versus back then. Yeah. Like my granddad didn't have options, so it was like it was a financial prison from that perspective.
That's why, like, if you look at the people pushing back against marriage now, it's actually really interesting. It's coming from both sides. It's coming from the left, who are saying it's a patriarchal construct that's oppressing women, and from the right, they're being like, oh, financially, guys, you're screwing yourselves because you're going to have to give her 50%. And you're thinking, this is really toxic from both sides.
Yeah.
Because what made me put this on the list was I listened to an episode of Modern Wisdom with a guy called Brad Wilcox. I've just reached out to him to come on the show. He wrote a book kind of in defense of marriage, and some of the stats he shared about the benefits of marriage are absolutely huge. And it's not like the kind of things that you would immediately think, well, some of these you would immediately think of, but you live longer, 8 to 9 years on average, mostly because guys are like behaving in a lower risk way.
Is that marriage or is that being with one person? Do you know what I mean? Like, was it actually specifically being married?
Yeah. But this is what is interesting. Nowadays, you have relationships that are marriage in all but name, which I am largely in favour of. Yeah. But I do believe there is an element of ceremony and connection, albeit you're making a contract with the state as well, which is something that not a lot of people want to do too. And equally with the decline in religion, we're seeing a lot less.
Yeah, there's a lot more humanist. Is that humanist? Yeah,
yeah, there's a lot of that, isn't there? Mm-hmm. I think it's weird, you know, you're saying about like, you say there, David, about people getting divorced more and like, because they think they've got more options. Like, there's an upside and a downside to that, isn't there? Because you don't want people stuck in a relationship, because I'm sure people stayed married that should never have stayed in. But then also, it's like, is it also just becoming too easy to not put the work in? And
100%.
You know, maybe if you push through this, you would get through it and you'd have an even better marriage.
Yeah.
But I think it's a weird one, that, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It was the happiness stats that shocked me as well. I looked into it, and the average man or woman is twice as likely to report themselves as being happy. That's mostly between the ages of 18 and 55. So there's a drop off after 55 for whatever reason. Maybe you've been with them for too long. But that was like a huge study in the US, the General Social Survey. And if you're married as a man or woman, you're twice as likely to report happiness. And happiness is something that a lot of us are looking for. Mm-hmm. And if the stability of a relationship and a dependable partner that you have a good dynamic with is that, and that makes sense, because I look at both your relationships and I see you as people that are happy in relationships, and I think they contribute to your happiness.
100%, absolutely.
And you're married, Chris, and it just looks to me like, oh, that's how it should be structured.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think like it's hard though, isn't it? Because like it's such a personal thing. Like you've got relationship dynamics, you've got like how, like what was your relationship like? How did you get together? Like my marriage, me and Jill share everything in terms of, like, we run a business together. Our whole lives are built together, like everything from career, the whole nine yards. So like that's quite rare in a way, you know. To share your business, and that splits all the way down the middle in terms of, like, money and all these big life decisions. It's all made together, so that brings us a lot closer and stuff. So yeah, it's my personal experience with marriage has been nothing but positive. And I couldn't wait to marry Jill, couldn't wait to, you know, to have the actual wedding day and everything it stood for. But equally, I can totally understand why people would be a bit hesitant to get married as well, for the reasons that you've stated, in terms of like, well, you know, there's a lot that goes along with it as well. And I think that, yeah, it's probably a bit of both.
Yeah, I just think when I look from the outside in, and I suppose with the family experience that I've had and the stats that you see in terms of the ability that the ability to support a child's development through a stable home. Mm. I think it's inarguably the preferred structure for families, ideally.
Yeah.
But that's really difficult. And I've got an interview coming up with Rob Henderson, who wrote Troubled, and he came from a very broken home, lived in like 7 different foster homes. And he said he would swap his top 1% academic achievement with Harvard, Yale, Cambridge for like a stable family in his upbringing.
Wow.
And some of the stats that he shares in terms of how much more beneficial it is to come from a stable home background even versus income is absolutely wild in terms of your outcomes as well, which I find fascinating. And I think there's like where you've got so much content that's pushing back against marriage or even just like stable monogamy, where it's pushing back against that. I think there's like a need to push back.
Yeah, I don't get that. See, to pick up what you're saying there, Jill volunteered for the children's panel for 2 years. So she sat on hearings and some of the stuff that she saw, you're just like, what, to your point, like pretty much every single child that came in front of that children's panel just didn't have a stable home. Mm-hmm. They didn't have a mum and a dad in the home, or two sort of, they were maybe like getting farmed out to grandparents, and the one parent was kind of absent. They were kind of coming in and out of their lives. It's just this chaos.
Which is probably even more disruptive.
Yeah, exactly. Because they don't, I mean, I don't know what that's, I've got no expertise in that area, but I can only imagine the feeling of like rejection and confusion when you all know what you're like when you're growing up and especially going through your formative years. So Jill used to see that all the time, but that was the one theme across the board, like boys and girls and all different ages. They would see the behavioural issues, mum and dad weren't on the scene, you know, or it was very, very dysfunctional if they were. So yeah, there's definitely something to be said for that unit staying together for the child and the stability of it.
Yeah, my own opinion is it's underrated as the vehicle that people could benefit from as a family unit, but I understand from an overrated perspective in terms of, oh, it's a really costly ceremony, it's a contract, and are we just rushing into this because it's a box to tick because society's pressuring me on it? But equally, I think society's also not pressuring in some ways.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Number two, crypto. Exciting time to talk about it as well.
Yeah, I'll be completely honest. My knowledge on crypto is minimal. My view on it is that it's... No, you don't. Colin probably does.
I don't.
My view is that it's massively overrated just based on how volatile it is and based on how many other more stable investments there are. I think there's such an emphasis on... I think it's just an exciting thing, especially with what it's doing right now. I think people, young people specifically, are getting so drawn into investing in crypto before they're investing in any other aspect of their life, even their own like actual personal development.
And ability to earn money, which I think...
I know a lot of business owners that need to invest in their businesses and are more concerned about investing in crypto than they are investing in any aspect of their own business. And I just think that's fucking wild. Equally, I'm sure there's people that have done that and been, you know, crypto millionaires, whatever else. There's all these stories, but... massively overrated in my eyes. I know that the Crypto Glasgow boys will be listening to this being like, what the fuck? But massively overrated for me.
Yeah.
As much as I have crypto, sold some this week, massively overrated.
Yeah.
Chris, how you feel about it?
Yeah, I completely agree. Me and Dave, I'm honest, I don't really know a lot about it. I've got crypto, invested in it, made a bit of money off of it, but it's overrated, and for the same reasons, it kind of taps into that lizard brain too much and gets people to bypass things that are really going to have long-term success. Because, and again, I think when you look at a lot of guys that have, and this is just my experience, when you look at a lot of guys, like the Crypto Glasgow guys, like they were deep into, I know you've had them on the show multiple times, they've been deep into crypto for,
since 2018.
I remember hearing their story, people laughing at them for investing in it, and now look at them and people, and I just think like, the people who jump into crypto, they often dismiss the level of expertise some guys have and the amount of research they put in, the time they've had in the market and stuff, you know, and they just chase that, like, you know, like just now when Bitcoin's, you know, thriving and it's going up and up and up and they're jumping on that bandwagon, and then like you rarely hear about the crashes afterwards, you know, because people, the one thing that really used to wind me up about crypto, I see a few business people that I followed on Instagram and stuff, and they'd be like, crypto this, crypto that in their bio, you know, oh, I've got a crypto hedge fund and I've got a crypto course and I've got a crypto this, crypto that. The second Bitcoin started going down, their bio changed overnight.
They became an AI expert probably.
Web3. AI, or it was back to what they were doing before crypto was on the up, and you're just like, that's another reason why I believe it's over, because it's so easy to get scammed. There's very few, I would say, legitimate operators out there, and you're going in, and even if you're, not even if you're giving them their money to invest, just buying their products or services, like you don't know what you're getting here, you know? So yeah, overrated.
It's very unregulated still though, isn't it, as
well? And that's one of the benefits of it, but also one of the downsides of it, because you can be exposed to so much. It's still such a young industry without the regulation too, that there are still so many scams, but also stuff that was like held up as legitimate, like some of these high yielding coins, like Luna would be an example, mm-hmm. Celsius, like the Sam Bankman-Fried, were deemed to be like good actors in the space, and people lost thousands, maybe millions, depending on how much exposure you had. Mm-hmm. So I think it's overrated from the perspective of it's very tempting for people to just dive in, as you say, and get horrendously burnt, or burnt enough that they never revisit it. For me, in terms of an asset class, it's underrated in terms of the percentage you can unlock if you have a long enough time frame, mm-hmm. or you have a time frame which you recognize. So David's mentioned that he bought in when it was on sale. He used to joke about his Instagram, I think it's on sale just now, I'll keep buying it. You bought when people were telling you Bitcoin's crap, people were removing yeah. crypto from the bio, nobody was talking about it. But now it's come back round. You've decided to sell because you're winning. The guy that's asking you about it in the queue at the supermarket, or the barista at Starbucks, or the taxi driver, if they're wanting to talk to you about it, that's a sign that it's starting to get near its top.
Yeah.
And you're
yeah.
starting to be like, right, okay, well, I was yeah. investing when it was in the doldrums.
It's actually the investment of mine that I've made the most money on, but I still think it's massively
the
overrated.
The percentage that I've made yeah. in crypto is so much better than all my standard stocks and shares.
Yeah. I think like there's a quote by somebody that says when the... as an old investor, it might have been Rockefeller.
When the tide comes out.
No, it's not the tide comes out, who's swimming naked, that's Warren Buffett. It's when the shoe shine boy starts telling you about stocks and shares, that's when you get out of the market.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, like, now everybody's talking about crypto, aren't they? And they're just like, do you know what? A lot of guys are, it's just betting. That's all you're doing. Yeah. You're just betting. You've got an app and you're sticking money on
largely.
It. But yeah. I would agree in terms of like, it's the part of crypto that's underrated. We're supposed to be doing overrated, underrated. We're saying that everyone's both. But
yeah.
Anyway, the part of crypto that's underrated.
There's nuance.
Exactly. Yeah. Is I think the concept of it, because generally speaking, when I see old fuddy-duddy guys from financial institutions getting uncomfortable, I think that's quite a good sign, because mm-hmm. that tells you like something new is coming along, totally. That's going to have look a positive impact on the world. Yeah, you go back, you look at quotes on the internet, oh, it's just a fad and all, you know.
Yeah.
I think when that change is coming through, I think when those voices that are maybe like the CEO of some hedge fund and they're, you know, they're about 85 years old, some mad old lizard is complaining about it, I think that's probably, that's a good sign for me.
Yeah,
I think.
That's what's funny. I think at the moment, the technology behind a lot of the coins and the use cases is overrated by some because it's not in action yet, but it will be underrated in the future because of what it might unlock. So for example, I'm very bullish on a coin called XRP, where it's all about the kind of transfer of funds across the world seamlessly without fees, which is great. But I actually invested in that coin because I want to make money from it.
Yeah.
Not because of the technology.
Right now.
Bitcoin as an asset class for me is not a currency for a future world currency for people.
Yeah.
I'm using it to get percentage gains and sell out and then buy back in when it dips and accumulate it, which is great. But people are maybe like, oh, but the blockchain and stuff like that. And I'm like, that's fantastic. And I love what it might
hopefully
end up doing.
Hopefully.
But right now I'm investing for fiscal reward and return. And I think if you mix up these two, or you maybe talk yourself into being like, oh, I'm all about the
ideological, like, you know, you believe in the mission, like, just be honest, man. If you're in it to make cash, just
100%.
That'll inform your decision making.
But it is eye-watering. When I was like, I sat in losses for like 2.5 years buying in, getting my average buy down on Bitcoin and a few other coins, and then in the last 3-4 weeks, like 150%+ on coins. The S&P 500, which is a good tracker by all means, and this is not financial advice. I've looked at that in times it's been like 20% for me. I've been like, that's really good.
Mm-hmm.
But that pisses all over it.
Which
that's why people turn their head to it. But when they're asking you about it, it's already done 150%. So if you're buying Bitcoin today at 73,000 for the record, are you really getting the value that I was getting when I was buying it at like 18, 19, 20? Totally. David bought it for like 30 odd or whatever.
Yeah.
It's a lot to think about. Number three, I'm just ready for Chris. Getting info from podcasts.
Overrated.
I'm going underrated.
I think it's underrated. Okay. Absolutely.
Do you know why people would maybe consider gonna flip the desk? Yeah. For those that are watching on YouTube, David's throwing his toys at the front. The reason this was included is a few developments have happened in the podcast space, and in particular a viral video by James Smith calling out a number of different podcasts and the challenge for people getting all their information from podcasts and taking everything at 100% face value. He had the number that he called out. I'm sure you can guess who he was aiming that at.
Yeah.
And he actually aimed some at Huberman as well, because there was a couple of
Aaron hates Huberman now. Have you ever spoke to him about Huberman?
Yeah, I've been really surprised by that.
He's such a hater. I think he mentioned one thing about back pain, and Aaron was like, he's wrong about everything. Sorry, Aaron.
But for me, I think it's underrated because of the platform that you can create and the amount of value you can get from like an hour with an expert.
Yeah.
But equally, I will say that there's no way that as a host, without the frequency of content I upload and people who have much more high profile shows than mine, it's really difficult to vet all the information covered in that conversation and to think it all stands up. So as a listener, you should get your information from podcasts 100%, but don't take everything at 100% verbatim, because it's not, it's very unlikely. Somebody might slip, there might be a slip of the tongue as well, and this guy who's delivered this information might have put something across, or somebody might be able to sell you something and will put something across in a particular way.
Yeah, I think also like a lot of the things are, what they're trying to say are factual, but a lot of it's just opinion based, but it's coming from a doctor or it's coming from someone else. But I think sometimes when you have that level of intellect or you've got a degree or whatever else, I think sometimes our opinions get confused for facts to an extent, and they're not actually facts, they're just their opinions on it, and then people are like, well, that's fucking wrong. And it must be incredibly hard, I think, being of that status, going on shows, because you really can't nowadays step out of line without somebody calling you out. Like, you know what it's like. You'll have found it in every TikTok especially, but there's certain things you can't
say
without...
I'm getting rinsed for saying Elf was shite. Without,
yeah,
remember, I mean, that?
Aye, some guy...
Yeah, a lot of people agreeing though.
A lot of people agreed to me, aye. Some guy said they were shite at rugby. I remember that comment.
That was so funny, because you obviously knew you, but then had to go...
on the double last year, mate. Badgers won the double, shut
the Cumbernauld Dan Carter.
There you go. I totally agree. See that whole thing about, like, you know, misinformation, because obviously it's been a big thing about like getting info from podcasts, especially in the kind of health space and stuff. And look, James Smith is doing the right thing by his audience, because, you know, that's his kind of shtick, isn't it? That's what he does. But like, you've got to work in, and this is probably on your bingo, people who have to do a shot for personal responsibility being mentioned on Colin's podcast. But it's so true. Like, if you get information, if you just take that as verbatim and then go and apply it, it's like, well, you've got to be held accountable to some degree, don't you? Like, you know, like, I've done a lot of silly things with my health and fitness over the years, albeit I was a lot younger and it didn't really affect me that much. But if you're going to just take something that somebody says verbatim off a podcast about like nutrition or anything at all, and just go and blindly apply it, I'm sorry, those people are the problem.
That's it.
You're so impressionable and so easily led that you can just listen to a podcast and go and change your whole lifestyle. Like, mental.
I look at it from a client perspective, and I suppose I'm viewed as a authority within that field, and clients question stuff for me sometimes. They're like, oh, why don't I need to do this? And I'm like, great that you're asking, like, that's exactly what I want. I heard I need to be doing it this way, or I heard I need to do it intermittent fasting or keto or whatever else. And I'm like, well, try it this way, this is my opinion on why that works. There's also a ton of fucking data on why it works, but I think it's the people that are the problem, that are the people that will be like, that is all I'm going to listen to and I'm going to follow that till later. It's like, well, maybe go elsewhere for information and see like different opinions.
Yeah.
And I think that's hard in this space, because a lot of people will follow very right-wing podcasts or very left-wing podcasts, and then you are only getting exposed. I mean, nowadays it's even harder, because the algorithm sends you exactly what you've consumed you get more and more of that. So
or something
that
that's going to trigger you as well. Yeah. One of the two. I mean, that's why TikTok is so mad, because it's sending stuff that, like, my self-development content getting pushed to people who want to sit in their bed all day and, like, earn universal credit or something. And I'm just like, we're not going to get on, are we? But also, the progressives are, like, the least tolerant of, like, any views that's not their own at that point. And I'm like, oh, this is really interesting to observe. The last time we met, we spoke about standing on the shoulders of giants, which is all about the access to information that we have nowadays, which is so fortunate. If I look at the health and fitness information that we had access to when we started training, it was so bad.
Bodybuilding.com.
Mate. It's simply shredded.
Men's health.
So to be able to tap into Huberman or some of the guests that I've had or some of the guests that are on whatever show you like, you're really fortunate. You just have to still cherry pick, in the same way we had to cherry pick from some of the stuff on YouTube or some of the stuff on bodybuilding.com.
It's funny you say that. I was in an event last Friday, and there was some really good speakers, and there were some speakers that weren't as good type thing. And I actually said to one of the guys that I was speaking to after, he asked me what I thought of it. And I was like, yeah, it was good. Some good, some bad type thing. And I was like, do you know what? I actually think nowadays I am... I struggle to like go to some of these events and listen to people because you're so exposed to amazing speakers through things like podcasts. So maybe I've like overconsumed Hormozy. I'll bring him up, take a shot. Hey. Somebody like that, like who I've listened to an insane amount of hours of him speaking, presenting, delivering things. Not just him, but other people in that space. And then you're maybe exposed to someone not of that level. So I think like the access that you get to these type of people, you wouldn't have had 10 years ago. The stuff, the information that you're able to get through podcasts, YouTube as well, like a kind of combination of both. Like, it's fucking insane. It's just like, you need to know where to go for these. Yeah, exactly.
So there might be stuff that Hormozy says that you're like, brilliant. But then there might be stuff he says about work-life balance that you're like, whoa, I don't know if I can live with that. Or he might say something about marriage, for example, and you just like, you don't resonate with it.
Sure.
And that's fine. But people are potentially being exposed to snake oil salesman on really large platforms podcast, and that's why James Smith was like kicking off, because some of the nutrition stuff that's been pushed by Diary of a CEO in particular has been wild.
Let's be honest, by any mainstream magazine, it's been the same for 50 years, so I don't think it's never going to change. There's always somebody selling bullshit, 100%. Like always. Now it's just moved from newspapers, magazines to podcasts.
It's the new printing press. Yeah, it really is,
for sure.
And I just think as a host, there's a relative level of responsibility I've got, while also understanding that I cannot vet every single thing that somebody says. Equally, I don't agree with everything that every single guest says.
This is our thing. Like, your podcast is a conversational podcast. You have guests on, you ask them insightful questions. Like, your research is next level whenever you have people on. Like, that is the style of show that you've set out. Like, you don't have a confrontational podcast. Like, some podcasts are. Some podcasts, they get the host will go back. Like, Dingwee's podcast, what's his name again? Patrick Bet-David, Infotainment. His podcast, he does a lot of politics and culture and stuff like that. He's really heated and he pushes back on guests. But, like, honestly, like, and I am no fan of Mr. Bartlett. I've made that very clear, right? Yeah. I'm not a fan of him. I'm not a fan of his podcast. But his podcast is his podcast. It's his rule. So if he's decided the kind of angle of this podcast is me just letting the guest run with it, asking a few questions and not pushing back, I don't think a host has any duty to push back. If they've decided this isn't the vibe of my podcast, I don't have, because that might then cut off future guests for them that might not come on and they don't want to do that. So I think that's fair.
He also runs it as a business, and that's one of the things that James Smith was talking about. And like, he has shares in Huel or Zoe or whatever else as well. And ultimately the ad revenue is higher if you get something that gets more views. Yeah. So what
does
might you do to get more views? Get something
more. Does he have shares in here? You should probably talk about it.
You almost got me again. Yeah, he does. Have you not seen any of his episodes?
Have you not seen the ad that follows you on the internet? I mean, whoever does his ads is...
James
is phenomenal, let's be honest. His marketing team's fucking insane. Yeah. I think they split test more than any other YouTuber, other than Mr. Beast, I think.
Yeah.
Like 12 different thumbnails and stuff like that, which is absolutely mad. But then that's interesting. What are you optimizing for? Because for me, I'm optimizing for value for the audience, not sensationalism. So I'm not going to have a guy on that tells you that calories don't exist. Because it just doesn't align with my values. But as you say, the audience can vote with their feet and their ears.
Yeah.
If they really don't like the direction that's going, then they don't have to listen. And he's growing still. So look.
Have you had many guests that you
disagree with?
Massively disagree on things, or has it been kind of just small points or whatever?
Not massively, like small points. Equally, when somebody says a lot in a few sentences, you have to pick what point you want to carry on. And it'd be really difficult to be like, oh, and see 5 minutes ago when you said this, can we just go back to that? And I want to disagree with you on it, because it doesn't make for a good listening experience, and two, it makes for a really fragmented conversation. Yeah. Yeah. And if somebody said something absolutely heinous, it's actually quite difficult. Like, you should try and challenge it if you can. But within the realms of like freedom of speech and opinion, I'm not presenting it as fact. But I think in terms of summarizing number three, I think it's underrated the info you can get, but it's overrated if you take everything like
every one of these is underrated and overrated.
Yeah.
We've got too much news.
I suppose
let's get off the fence with this one. And David said, are we seriously going to cover this? And that is NOFAP.
I didn't know what it was.
I don't really know much about this either. Genuinely.
I don't really know much about this.
Oh, it's just is it No Nut November?
No. But all
like
the time.
Never. So it's basically not masturbating for any of the audience that don't know what it is.
Yeah.
I don't think you've got much female listeners, do you?
A mixture of maybe 80-20 male female.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's just Does it not get ties to like the whole red pill movement? Is that not like a thing?
Yeah,
like,
to some extent.
Like,
it's largely guys that are normally porn addicted. So it's got a big link to like a no porn movement.
Right, okay.
So I think no porn is underrated, but I think NoFap itself is overrated. Yeah, because I mean, I've had a few guests that have had porn addictions and sex addictions, and right. they definitely say that refraining from that is helpful.
Right, okay.
But NoFap itself, again, Huberman, and I think, I want to say Derek Moore Plates More Dates have done quite a lot of content on this.
So he has. That's where I've seen content on it.
Interestingly enough, it has quite big benefits for focus and for natural testosterone production, right. which I think we're all interested in. Absolutely. From that perspective, just interviewed Lucas Owen, who Chris knows, and that was a really good conversation in terms of understanding what's going on with men's testosterone. But it peaks your testosterone if you were not to masturbate, or I think actually orgasm or climax at all for a week. It peaks at its natural point, but thereafter it just stays level.
You're a child. Sorry. You said orgasm.
I just love hearing Colin talk about that stuff. I don't know why.
You didn't know it was coming?
No.
So there are big benefits in that first week where your natural testosterone responds. But I think a lot of the NoFap movement is coming from guys stopping something that's pathological and is taking up hours of their day or interrupting their lifestyle.
I
think so.
That is mental. It only takes me about, I don't know, 4 minutes. I honestly think anything, it's like moderation. If it's not disturbing your life, I don't think it needs to be a focus point. Like, it's something that's happened for years. I think it'll be something that continues to happen.
Harming your relationships in some way.
Or you're spending hours doing it.
If you spend hours doing it, first of all, you're doing it wrong.
And you've got a huge forearm.
Yeah, you want to be like Popeye? I based on what you just said, then I would say it's overrated.
I think for a sect of the world, they're really struggling with that problem, and I think a lot of young men who've grown up in the internet age more so than we have in terms of the amount of screen time they've had. I didn't have like a phone that could have that type of video on it.
I see that's
I was a lot older.
If you look at like back in the day, like the only access you'd get to like porny stuff was like your dad's Playboy magazine if you had one. Nowadays you quite literally open up a phone and you can get pretty much full nakedness.
Well,
TikTok
and,
like full
X
naked.
Are pretty explicit.
So you just have to search for it or like buy a magazine or whatever else or fucking watch a video.
It's an access thing, isn't it?
Oh, it's madness.
And that's
like
why
what pops up on your phone.
I think a lot of people are ended up more addicted or habituated to it because of these things.
Jordan Peterson actually, he was speaking once about you see more naked women on your phone in a day now than most men 10 years ago seen in a lifetime, which is fucking nuts. Or like in a year or whatever, like you see more and it's actually kind of nuts.
That's mad.
Yeah.
It is, but having spoken to people who've been addicted in that space and knowing the amount of young men that are suffering with it, I don't think the NoFap movement is the be all and the end all, because like masturbating is quite a natural thing, but limiting your exposure or having no exposure at all to porn is a big thing as well, because I've heard people talk about it.
Yeah, that seems to be.
Like, and also because of the access they've got, the extremity of what people are watching is
just
adapting. David likes to steal Tony Robbins' quote, progress.
I thought you were going to talk about my porn selection now.
Well, I don't
David
know.
Likes,
I don't know
David likes to watch Tony Robbins' porn.
Progress is happiness.
You know, Tony Robbins' bukkake.
That's the clip, cut that. But you use that quote, progress is happiness. People are progressive beings, and it's the same with the what they view in order to what's going
to
satisfy.
It's the same with anything else.
There's a writer I think you probably like, Mary Harrington.
Yeah.
Have you heard her stuff? She's got a law of FAP enthalpy, and she talks about basically what's a law of FAP enthalpy. So what you start watching is not what you finish watching over a 5-year period. And guys are exposing themselves to like the most like niche weird fetishes and almost like building like really unusual requirements. And I think those are the guys that we need to like remove from this situation.
Well, there's a big thing about people not being able to perform in the bedroom based on how much porn they consume. Like they can't get boners because they're so used to watching this weird fucked up stuff. So when an actual real life sex situation happens, they're like, fuck it.
Doesn't tick their boxes.
I need to think of, you know, somebody stuck.
Piss on me.
Two arms in a car. They're being shit on. And like, right, okay. Right,
there. Go.
But the next one leads into this, I think.
Yeah, it does. And that's Tonka Ali, which is a supplement in the testosterone boosting space.
Mm-hmm. I've got zero experience. I've never taken it. Alex Caldwell takes it and loves it, apparently.
I love it. Pfft. I take it.
Yeah?
I take it.
How's the morning wood?
Aye. Pitching tents. every morning. But no, it's good.
Do you notice the difference? Like, yeah, actually,
honestly, and I'll be.
You've got more experience than me because for the listeners' benefit, I've been having it for 7 weeks.
Right.
Had a really good conversation with Lucas, which I'll refer people back to. But Chris has been a long term user.
And I'll be honest, I used it because I heard Andrew Huberman say it in the podcast. Yeah. And because again,
you learned information from a podcast.
I did, yes, and it benefited me because, and also, I'm an adult who was able to go, what's the risk reward here? I found like good quality, good high quality tongue at Alina. Do you know what? I'll buy 8 weeks worth and I'll see how I feel. Yeah. And if I don't feel any different, I'll just patch it. And I don't think I'm going to have any adverse side effects. And I didn't, and I've taken it ever since. Move the microphone there. I think it's a really, really powerful supplement. I think I felt a difference in terms of like, I know it sounds quite generic, but overall energy, mental clarity,
drive is
the
big one.
Was big, you know, especially in the morning, like when I got up. Like, I've never been, I would never say I've been groggy in the morning, but as soon as I woke up, I felt like, right, I'm switched on here. So yeah, I rate it.
And this is in a backdrop of men's testosterone levels falling naturally at about 1% per year due to the environmental factors.
From age of 30 or in general?
In general now.
Right, okay.
Mad stat, if that continues by about 2035, most of the men in the world will be infertile. If your testosterone keeps falling,
that's why you're there.
Wow.
I'm going to freeze my eggs.
you'll be fine. You'll be doing something about your test. But yeah, in terms of for me, Tonka Ali, really well studied now.
Mm.
And we've got enough data, both anecdotally and in terms of the kind of thought leaders that we get access to say that it checks out. Yeah. It is stacked as a stack though with Fiducia agrestis.
Yeah.
And sometimes ashwagandha, although apparently ashwagandha can have some interesting mental health implications for men and make you feel distant and detached.
Oh.
And there's a Derek More Place More Date supplement, Sigma Mind, has ashwagandha in it. And it says after 4 weeks, you must take a week off, cycle off it, because the ashwagandha can basically make you distant during that period and like detached, emotionally, basically numb.
Interesting.
Wild. It's got a lot of data now. I had a lot of questions about it off the back of the episode with Lucas, Alex Caldwell, who works with David, big fan, Chris,
yep,
big fan.
Big fan.
And I'm going to get on board.
Personally, I've enjoyed it as well. And I don't think there's any downsides. I think the only risk is if you are somebody that is potentially quite an aggressive person, increasing your testosterone levels could lead to that blowing over. Not in the same way, it's not roid rage, but if you're that predisposed, that can be the case. You can be irritable, basically.
Have you taken anything else for testosterone? Have you ever tried anything
that's
else?
That's been the only thing.
No, I've not.
So I took Catawba and Sistange, which...
Oh, I took Catawba.
Yeah.
And sorry, I'm totally lying.
Both of them.
So I've taken both those things. Yes, sorry. I've taken everything you just said.
It was Jake Carter. I remember when I was working with him, short period. He's like the world's smartest, stuff like that. I noticed the difference on that. Like, probably a very similar benefit.
Yeah.
You stopped?
I remember that. No, I still take Catawba, but Sistange, I don't think you can get it. I had to get it off AliExpress or Alibaba.
Did you? No, you can get it, because I got it off of... it was easy to get.
Because there was a time I bought loads of supplements off of... I think it was genuinely Alibaba, and they came and... what looked like
it was like the
bag of gear.
No, it was like Silk Road. I remember you showing me a picture.
What the fuck is this? I bought that, melatonin, and like those three supplements, melatonin, Sistange, and Catawba. And I was like, can I take these? They're quite literally from a random supplement shop. Zero branding on it. I was like, try it. try every month.
Let's see what happens. Melatonin, though, you mentioned that. That's a powerful thing to be playing
with. Took that short term, and then... again, it was actually Jake Carter that recommended that. I don't know if he would have changed his mind on that now, because I know Hugh Roman's dove deep into that, and you're not really meant to.
If you start to become reliant on that, it's a big, big issue.
Good for like long haul flights, things like that. If you're changing time zones, can be very beneficial for
you. One thing I will never need is any supplements related to sleep.
Nah.
Like a light.
Every night.
So I am too, but like, I'm the exact same. Like, I sleep really well, but sometimes I'll take glycine and I get a better, deeper sleep. My only, like, I wake up groggier for sure when I take it. If I know I'm like, I really want a good sleep, maybe I want a little bit, you know, I feel like I want to be more recovered or whatever else.
Yeah.
I'll take that. And the only downside of that, because I've noticed a much bigger benefit from taking glycine than I have ashwagandha, ZMA, any other sleep supplements, because I've tried most supplements at some point.
Yeah.
Glycine by far, Kirsty's the same. If she like feels like, or we're going to get less sleep and I want a deeper, better sleep. Glycine's phenomenal. 3 milligrams of that is class. 3 grams of that, sorry.
You really notice it.
Yeah, good job.
Number six, Hyrox, the talk of the town.
I mean, none of us have done it, and I feel like we're all probably similar on it. I'm going to go overrated just based on the fucking hype around it. Equally, I think it's phenomenal from a business perspective. Unbelievable. I think for the amount of people that's got into fitness, great. I feel it's overrated, largely just the hype around something so simple, but also that's why I respect it so much from a business perspective, because it's class in that sense.
Yeah, I think you've got to take your hat off to what they've built.
Yeah.
But at the same time, people, depending on what your fitness goal is, I feel people can be swept along by the hype of it just now.
Yeah.
And if you've got like a body composition goal or a strength goal or something like that, and you've suddenly decided that Hyrox is your thing, keep your eye on the ball and don't get shiny object syndrome. And that's something that's such a risk in many regards in life. Like crypto, we mentioned earlier, people take their eye off the ball in terms of building their business or building their normal investment portfolio. I think a lot of people have been like, whoa, Hyrox is the new thing, I need to go after
this. I do wonder if it's like, when I was 20 to 24, Tough Mudder was like the thing. Everyone did a Tough Mudder. I don't know if that's a little bit different, because Tough Mudder is not a, they market it as not a race. Like, it's, you know, everyone comes and does it together for charity or whatever else. I think one of the biggest draws to it is that people want something to compete in. I think when you leave school, you lose. Like, you've obviously kept playing rugby, but like most people, unless you play football or rugby, largely most people stop sport after school. Like most, the vast majority, I would have said. And I think it's like a competitive outlet for people. So I think that's one of the biggest draws to it. And it's the thing that, like, if I do it, that would be why I've done it, to like compete against other people
to give
and to see other people that are like doing well, and be like, I think I could do better than them.
Because I'm naively like
well when you start running again, you got rid of weight.
I'm fucking glass at running.
Well, you have to run 8k, which I think a lot of people forget.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people don't realise that there's more running involved than you
expect. I've done like a test of it. I mean, my client Jadeen done like a test, and see, if I'm being honest, like, cool, it's kind of hardish, but like, I was just fucking bored. Like, I thought it was incredibly boring.
Really?
Like, none of the exercises, in my opinion, are challenging. None of the weights are incredibly challenging.
Is this
equally,
not pretty
under
heavy?
Complete fatigue, of course, it's fucking challenging. I'm not saying that.
But you know, that's a good
thing. I thought it was a bit boring.
It's like, it's a lower barrier to entry.
That's why it's so popular. Yeah.
It's like, so much better than CrossFit.
I remember when I was young and impressionable, I got into CrossFit for about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Again, I'd stopped playing rugby. I stopped playing rugby because I had an undiagnosed heart condition. I'd done CrossFit. I don't really know how that works, but that gives you an insight into how clever I was.
Have you ever been diagnosed with a heart condition?
Nah, I'm just trying to go back to the. No, right. I'm fine.
You're alive.
I'm fine. It's just like, again, the Olympic lifts, the skill elements of things, and that's what makes CrossFit CrossFit. I'm not saying you should take it away, but I think like that would you'd love the competition side of CrossFit, but then it's like, you're really going to be able to do like 15 snatches under fatigue. Like, you know, my technique's absolute dog shit. I'm not going to time to go to Olympic lifting coach, whereas Hyrox to me seems to be like more. I don't really know a great deal about it. Obviously, I just see lots of it.
Yeah.
And let's just touch on it briefly. I see some of the breakdowns of people's performances that they post. Fuck me, man.
I actually know what you're good at.
Like, just say you lost.
Yeah.
Just say you didn't do well. Just say you didn't train hard enough.
Yeah.
Like, wasn't my day today, guys. Yeah. You know, I had my pre-workout 5 minutes too late.
Yeah.
Shut up.
There's a lot to be said for that, because people, the stats really don't lie in the cold light of day. Mm. And it's great that people are finding a competitive endeavour, but own your performance.
Yeah. That's it.
That's great.
There's no nuance. See sports like powerlifting and like even like athletics and stuff like that. Like, there's nuance in like more skill based sports like football and rugby. You know, because the better team can lose. The better player can come off second best.
Yeah.
But seeing things like this, seeing powerlifting, who lifted the most weight?
Yeah.
Was it you?
Yeah.
No. Well, you lost then.
Yeah. It's not subjective.
It's just, and Hyrox used to be the very same thing. It's like, this is what it is. Like, it's very clear athletic output across these different disciplines.
Yeah.
Who can do it the fastest? Mm-hmm. Who can do it the best? And that's it.
If Hyrox can build on how good it's been this year in terms of the marketing and the number of people taking part in it, hats off to it. I just hope it's not a flash in the pan, because I think if it's a gateway drug for people to get more into their fitness, more competitive, amazing. But a lot of the people I see doing it are people that are already in the fitness space.
Do you know what I'd love about Hyrox? I've always thought, because they do the world championships and they do the pro version, but the pros, it's just the same events, whatever else. I actually think it'd be amazing if the pro events did incorporate more complex movements. So it was like 1K run, 5 rope climbs, 1K run, 50 muscle-ups. Like, I think that'd be phenomenal. I think it'd be a bigger spectacle for the pro athletes, because you're getting pro CrossFitters that are quitting CrossFit to go and compete in Hyrox, because there's a more promising future.
So that says a lot for it.
So yeah, I think it can grow massively. Like, I think it has grown massively. The Glasgow one was packed. Like, everyone on my
Instagram.
Everyone
spoke so highly of it, which I'll say was amazing.
Or at the 12-week peak event. But they were at one of two places. If you weren't there, I don't know where you were.
Oh yeah, what are you doing?
Like, what were you up to?
Where were you guys?
Get a grip.
You were birthing a child.
Number 7, Dubai.
Overrated.
I've got the most.
I loved there, but overrated. Yeah. I used to love it, and I actually... Like, I loved it, and I loved it when I was the age of going out partying, drinking, meeting girls, and that was my year in Dubai. And then me and Kirsty went back last October for a month, and honestly, like, we actually fucking hated it. And neither of us said we hated it until we were back about a month, and then we kind of talked. We were like, yeah, it was good. Like, we didn't want to say it was shit, because you kind of sound like an arse if you go, oh, lived abroad for a month and it was shit. And people are like, you're a cunt, which is the truth. I am, but. Yeah, I think it's massively overrated. I think even actually, so I was speaking to an accountant recently, and he was talking about the amount of coaches, personal trainers moving to Dubai for tax relief. And he actually broke down that most of them are getting next to no tax relief when you actually break down how much they're spending to set the company up, how much they're spending to escape Dubai in the summer because it's too hot, and they're going to live in Bali for 6 months and rent a villa in Bali and get flights to Bali and whatever else. And he broke down like all of the costs, and he's like, you'll maybe save a little bit of money. So I think for a lot of people, if you're going there for 5-6 years, you're going to earn like a ton of money in certain jobs. But things like coaching, from my experience, you're not going out there to be in some insane tax haven. And you also need to pay VAT on any clients that you're training back home, which is probably most of your clients.
That's such an interesting perspective, because for me, from a holiday destination, I think it's probably overrated now, but I think from a lifestyle perspective, depending on what you were going out there to do, I think it could be underrated. But I'm gonna get off the fence. I think it's overrated by the amount of people that are flocking out there and trying to sell you the dream, because as you say, you have to escape during the summer.
Yeah.
When I go during the winter, and I'm going again next week, which I would still class as winter speaking. I'm gonna have a fantastic time.
Yeah.
I'm gonna do work, I'm gonna train, I'm gonna podcast, I'm gonna socialize. I think the social life out there is amazing, as you said, David. And I say that as somebody that doesn't really drink very often at all either. But I've drank out there, and I've gone to events sober out there, and it's pretty incredible.
There's a lot of opportunity. Like, when I was there, the companies that I was exposed to when I worked for Project when I was there, like, there was cool things that we were doing that you don't necessarily get access to here. Like, I think we worked with American Express, and we worked with all these big brands, and we were just fucking personal trainers. So I think there's some cool opportunities out there, of course. I just think, like, what people make it out to be is massively overrated. The summer alone is fucking hell on earth.
How
like,
many months are you talking?
Do you know what? 5, I'd say. Like, you're talking from May, June, July, August, September. Yeah, 5. October starts to kill. We went in October, the first week was hell on earth still. Humidity is horrendous. So it's like, cool, was it worth living somewhere that you really fucking don't like for 5 months of the year? I wouldn't have said so. That's, I'd rather think somewhere was okay most, like, all year, than be like, this place is amazing for half the year. Fuck that.
Yeah. I love spending time there, but I don't know what it's like to live there. So I think you were one of the people that was best qualified to address that as well.
Yeah.
It's interesting because you say, like, you loved it when you were, like, in that going out phase. Like, one of our mutual friends, Mike and Dan run their coaching business out there, and they don't live that lifestyle at all. They've got a family. They live in villas out in the Dubai Hills.
Yeah.
They play golf. They run their coaching business, and they love it. Interestingly, the education system out there is really good as well, if you're in the right schools, of course.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to bring my kids up there at all.
That's really interesting, because I've seen, again, Dan's one of them, and Sukh, he's been posting a lot of content about Dubai recently. And raising his family there and stuff, and like speaking to Dan like in person when I was over there filming a podcast with him, Dan said his daughter Isabella, he just said, like, could not imagine raising her back here now.
Yeah.
It's like the level, like, she just walks around the estate, the safety.
Yeah, safety, 100%.
The quality of education. Like, he spoke about all of those things really, really highly, and Sukh has echoed that. Sukh's got two daughters. I think Ivy's in school. I think his other daughter is just born, but like, he all speaks about in his content about this the same things.
I think it'll be different. I've not got kids, so like, the safety thing's a massive thing. It is the, like, people walk about at 3 a.m. themselves. There's not a there's very little crime in that sense, or at least crime that's spoke
and
about.
And they deal with it.
And they deal with
I bet
it.
They deal
but
with it.
I think yeah. I think you yeah, just make you grow up so soft, and you're not exposed to anything. Like, I mean, I don't know. I've not got kids, but I just think. I'm not saying that I want my kids to go to some rough school, but I think there's an element of like you fucking learn a lot doing something like that as well.
Yeah, it's horses for courses at the end of the day, isn't it? And I find the place fascinating. I think it's on the up and up. Mm-hmm. I'll be interested to see how it continues
to
in the same way as High Rocks. Will the hype continue?
It is mental how new it is as a place to live. Like when you look at what's there, you just it is. Insane what's happened over the last 50 years.
I'm a pretty energetic person, and when I'm pretty flat out, but when I'm there, I'm like, I'm quite excited about the direction because everything's like pushing you.
Yeah, totally. Which, you've said that when you went, you it was like it was inspiring to see like the hugeness, the enormity of everything.
It was.
Everything's bigger.
Exactly. I've been twice. And loved both trips were amazing. I did get like that inspiration. The only thing I would say though, and this is probably just a personal thing, like I get way more, like I always get inspired when I go away on pretty much any holiday, but mainly city breaks. That's when I really get kind of, I'm talking about like work and creativity and all that. I always come back with loads of ideas and stuff. The inspiration like I felt in Dubai is absolutely nothing compared to what I felt in New York or when I go to London. Cause I just think it's that history and that character to the city that's just a different level. But Dubai was still, I was still like walking around going, this place is pretty cool. There's stuff happening here. There's an energy about the place. Like it is a really, really cool place. I think like if you were going out there for work and like you know, if you were meeting different people and try to kick off different projects, I think you would be flying. I think wouldn't you? You would just be like working all day and loving it. I could definitely see that. But I would still say, well, the only other thing I would say about it, and this is, I probably don't know enough, it seems like things can change over there very quickly and the laws are what the laws are. Yeah. There's no gradual process of things coming in place. Yeah. So as much as it's a tax haven and it's a haven for business right now, the ruling bodies could change that tomorrow.
I think already they're adding corporation tax in there.
They're scaling it in. And like you say, you can't argue there. That's one of the big benefits.
It's fitting or fuck off. That's our culture. Yeah, you know?
That's one of the benefits. Like if you cross us, then it's... Game over, or you'll go to jail.
There's an attractive thing about it as well, for the safety and for the rules, and that's I respect that about it as a country.
It's got a lot more Western since I first went in 2016. Oh, wow. Totally. Like even Ian met you in 2018, and when I went last year, and I was telling him about what we were up to and some of the brunches and stuff, he was like, "There's no way you would have got away with that," and I was like, "It was just how it was by now."
My dad went to Dubai Sevens years ago.
He had to
get taken to, I remember him telling me the story about getting taken to this pub in the middle of nowhere, and it was all like unmarked, and then he was going in and they were allowed to have drinks and stuff, but obviously my dad and his rugby mates are there pissed, and they started to get a bit rowdy, and the bouncer was kind of over at them and stuff, and like that, he's always maintained that opinion about Dubai. But and then I say to him, like, dad, it's just completely different.
It's
now.
Different
like,
now. You can totally buy it in hotels or at like set bars.
I think still there's some rule in most places that needs to be attached to a hotel if you're serving alcohol. Maybe changed a little bit more now, but when I was there in 2014, it was super strict on things. Like you could not live with anyone that you weren't married to.
Right,
you couldn't hold hands, you couldn't kiss. Like it's still kind of frowned upon to like show public affection, but people do it. Like stuff like that happens all the time, and it's like a slap in the wrist from the bouncer type thing.
I think it's interesting, and I think the people that I see pushing it the hardest are sometimes trying to tell themselves that it's amazing. Like, I'm like, my stories will be annoying over the next week or so whenever this gets released, because I'll be sharing how much I enjoy the place, but I'm not living there full time, so I'm not trying to convince everyone that it's amazing when I'm living there, because you're talking about the summer period.
I can't wait to see you dance again. That is my favourite thing from whenever you're anywhere.
When I'm steaming. Oh, man. Unreal. This is anything. That sometimes goes in the close friends.
Gravity. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
What a place.
I screen recorded that. I'm kidding.
Number 8, Nando's.
Massively underrated.
Underrated.
Used to be overrated back in the day when everybody was mad for it, but see you go for Nando's now, menu's totally different, so many more things in the menu.
Yeah.
Super tasty, reasonably priced. Like I feel like it's like went through that like hype stage and now it's just like solid tasty food every time you go.
That's like, exactly my thoughts on it. It's the most consistent, like it's never going to be unbelievable. No, but it's always absolutely good. Not.
You know exactly what you're getting because it's a franchise and it's a set standard and it's much quote unquote healthier than a McDonald's or a Burger King or a KFC. Yeah. You just go in, you sit down, you know what you're getting.
Yeah. But also see if you're not, I know obviously it caught on because like obviously it was great for like tracking and it was healthy, macro friendly. But see if you just want to go and have a really, and you're not after any of that, you should have a tasty meal. Yeah. You still have a taste, it's great for like a pre-cinema dinner. Like I think it's massively underrated these days. Obviously back in the day when everybody was like Cheeky Nando's
every two minutes,
it was fucking annoying, but like underrated for me.
Cheeky Nando's and that wee emoji, that's so annoying.
Ugh, yeah.
Per year?
Yeah. Me and Costa were talking about this because I was like, how many do you eat per year? I'd say I'm like, I'd say I'm 3 a month on average, sometimes way more, sometimes way less.
Deliveroo or do you go and get it? You're close
a month?
To...
Aye.
Really?
Aye.
That's mad.
He's so close.
Is that a lot?
Yeah, it's quite a lot.
Oh, is it? Oh,
I have 3 a year.
I'll
get it delivered to the office. Me and Kirsty will get them if we're out and about. Me and if I'm with any of the work pals and we're going somewhere, it's like just jump in there, it's easy.
Every fitness wanker likes it though, don't they?
Yeah. Kirsty a lot. Like,
if you're out and about and you're like, well, just get Nando's. Yeah. You're going to say yes.
Yeah. Oh, I don't go that often, but like I do. Jill loves it. Jill loves that. They do like that sunset burger. Oh, and she's unreal. Mad for that's the sunset what, burger.
And it's not even that high in calories. I think because I probably track my food for like 3 months of most years, and that's just, and I love to eat out. And it's like, that's easy.
Yeah.
I go there a lot for that.
Mm. Yeah. Because you've got all these people going through the 12-week peak just now.
Yeah.
In the early weeks in particular, they can absolutely get away with. Yeah. Nando's, even slightly later on if push came to shove.
Right up until. If you can track it, you can track it. Yeah. Is it perfect? No. Is anywhere? No.
No, well, exactly. There's a big discrepancy. But yeah, I was going to completely agree that it went through the hype stage, Cheeky Nando's and people checking in on Facebook and stuff like that as well, and it was insufferable. But now I think like you just go in, you know what you're after.
I still check in Facebook.
You would be so annoying on Facebook back in the day.
Yeah, I was.
It's just annoying on Instagram
exactly
now.
Exactly, it's on Instagram.
Repost to Facebook.
Number 9, and this was at the request of Mr. Burns, Star Wars.
Overrated. Now, let me be clear here, right? I'm a massive Star Wars fan. Not to the extent where I go to the pictures with a lightsaber or anything like that, right?
Just as Chewbacca.
Just as Chewbacca. But I'm a massive Star Wars fan, right? Of the original films.
Yeah.
But the new films.
Original being just the first.
The original trilogy.
Right, okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not the prequels.
What about Anakin and stuff like that? And
yeah,
that's what I grew up.
I've got quite kind of thought. I know, obviously, like, see when you go into all the you know, Star Wars dweebs that let this run their life, like, they get really upset about the prequel series. But I remember being a wee guy and being so excited.
Yeah,
about
it.
And, like, remember the first time you saw Darth Maul and the black and red face, you're like, and the double lightsaber. They're really, really prominent memories for me. I don't know what age I was.
So 2001.
So I'd have been 10. So yeah. I was 10 when it came out, and I remember being at the Showcase Cinema and what just being like so excited to see a brand new Star Wars. And obviously the original ones, I kind of grew up on them, saw them, was fascinated.
On video.
But the new ones are just utter dog shit. And I'll tell you why, because this is
go broke in my wheelhouse.
Right?
Go broke.
It's just lazy fucking storytelling. It's laziness because. Here's a thing for me, right? Every single main character in any film, and you can take any film or TV show, this isn't about like Star Wars. Like, look at fucking Legally Blonde, the complete opposite, right? Elle Woods, if you've not seen Legally Blonde, don't lie. Yeah. We all know what Legally Blonde is, right? Great film, right? Elle Woods.
Who's the actor in that? Reese
Witherspoon.
I was going to hurt you by a joke there.
He's going to say, kill somebody with a knife or with a spoon.
Oh, what about a joke?
Fuck's sake.
That is terrible, but we'll go
awful.
With it.
Yeah. Like, everybody has, like, every main character has some sort of struggle to overcome and they fall down. And then you can look at it again, any series. Like, I've just finished the last season of Billions, the latest season of Billions, sorry. Even in like popular shows like Suits, Game of Thrones, all these films, whoever the central character is, the good guy, if you like, the good, you know, the hero, they're always going to have a struggle. They're always going to try to do something and then get their ass handed to them. That's what happened to Luke in the original series, right? He stepped up, tried to fight Darth Vader and get his ass handed to him. He gets slapped a bit on an empty track and gets his hand cut off, right? That's what happens, right? And then you come back, Return of the Jedi, and then he's like, you know, been slapping people about and he's a hero again.
Yeah.
And I just think like, they just completely ignore that in favour of, I don't know, I honestly don't know what's in favour of. Is it Is it politics, whatever? Is it some sort of deeper message that they're trying to get across?
Are you familiar with the Scottish YouTuber Critical Drinker?
Yeah.
So yeah. I'd love to have him on the show. I think that'd be really interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
And he just despairs at the direction Hollywood's gone. And he is exactly what you were describing there. He was like, the female lead should still go through the, as the protagonist, go through the journey of learning. Mm-hmm. But it was very much, no, she's perfect as she is. Yeah, and she'll just get to the point and you just have to shut up and deal with that because you're a misogynist.
But it's really annoying.
It was like, oh, wow, you're actually going that way.
But it's people with really short memories though, because there's been female protagonists forever. Yeah. And they've went through struggles. And that's why they're like, one of my favourite films is Erin Brockovich. It's a phenomenal film, and Julia Roberts is the main character.
True Romance, it's another one.
Yeah, and but like again, there's struggle there. There's failure. Like it's just and it's again. There's more things in the story, specifically Star Wars, that's just lazy and it's quite patronising to an audience. You know, like whereas like, there's just things that happen. There's just big. And again, I'm not sitting here as some sort of like film critic, right?
Yeah.
But I know a bit about storytelling. It is part a big part of my job, mm-hmm. and it also is like a hobby of mine to write my own like fiction. And you just know like. You got to treat the audience with some level of respect. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not just putting out something to complete idiots. They can put things together. And when something's happening in a story and there's just a big fuck off leap, people are just going to be like, what is that? Mm-hmm. Or they break that fourth wall with some ham-fisted political message and you're just like, oh, for fuck. Even if it's one you agree with, you still be like, this is jarring.
Yeah,
you know?
It's not what I signed up for. I didn't come and watch this to be politically inspired about a movement.
I know. Hey, the guy's got a lightsaber, mate. Yeah. The guy's got a lightsaber. Why are you telling me about some cultural issue? He's got a lightsaber, there's a Wookiee next to him.
Yeah, stab him.
Exactly. Like, move people about the Force and like jump in an X-Wing and people use your laser guns all day long.
Yeah, that's what we're after.
Don't fucking break the fourth wall to give me some like ham-fisted message about something that's going on in today's culture. It's just infuriating, man.
Yeah.
Infuriating.
I agree, I found that latest trilogy really hard to watch.
There's also like 400 spin-off things of it now, eh?
Yeah, they've got brother like a character watched, what was the one on Boba Fett or something?
Yeah.
Awful. Ian watched that.
No. Do you know one that's is quite good? The Rogue One, which isn't a spin-off series, it's a film. Rogue One is quite good. Solo, awful. Like, again, it's just like Disney have got their hands on it and they're just trying to churn out as much content as possible, I think, and they're just like... they're just rinsing it for, and you can see the same kind of like mistakes, if you like, and all this, because one of the really good was The Mandalorian. That was the first season was actually pretty good in that, and it seemed to have some promise. And then the seasons went on, and it was just the same stuff. And the things they do to the characters in Star Wars, really, just the final point on it, because I do get quite fired up about this. Like Luke Skywalker and Han Solo were a massive part of my childhood, as a lot of people, like really like iconic characters, and what they've done to those two characters in the latest season is just ridiculous.
Neutered them, really.
Yeah, yeah. And like Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker himself, said to Rian Johnson in the reading of the script, he said, "I disagree with every single decision you have made for my character."
Yeah.
And that's Luke fucking Skywalker himself telling you that.
Yeah.
And but obviously Rian Johnson's a cement head that's fucking awful. Is his name Rian Johnson? I think it is.
I can't tell.
Can't remember. Director's name, but
Rian Johnson. That's the Lover King.
That's the longevity guy. It's also the longevity guy.
Yeah.
You know, see-through guy, ginger hair.
Yeah, he's mental, the vampire.
So it is. It's the same name. That's weird, that. Yeah. Yeah. The same
super
name.
Weird. They both went viral like a year after one another, probably.
That's mad. Yeah. Anyway, I think that's...
Let's move on from Star Wars.
Yeah, sorry. Chris
can lower his blood pressure. Or maybe he can't, because it's number 10, it's running.
So I think it's...
No, number 10's five guys.
Oh, we'll go with five guys then.
Sorry, you're supposed to skip that. Sorry, number 10. Running.
What are we going running up, guys?
I'll just let the host tell us what one we're on.
Let's go with five guys. Overrated
I
for me.
I have overrated.
I like it, but it's overrated. It's too expensive. It's fucking expensive. It's awesome for what it is, I would say.
If I look at the number of people that share that to the story and Nando's, I'm kind of like, why would you just not go to Nando's every single time?
Because they wanted a burger.
To get the sunset burger.
There you go.
Beef burger. That's a real. I don't count. Oh, I love a chicken burger, but chicken burgers ain't burgers. Yeah. Burger is beef.
Beef, yeah.
Or pork and beef.
Side note, Five Guys has a very, very interesting story of how it was founded and stuff. Okay. And I think he's been like the current CEO or somebody high up has been on a few podcasts telling the story. It's really interesting to check it out.
Do you know Shake Shack was founded as well? That's kind of a mad story.
No,
Shake Shack was
love Shake Shack, by the way.
So that book I'm reading, Unreasonable.
So that's much better than Five Guys,
yeah,
in my opinion.
100%.
That's like come straight out you though. No, every Shake Shack I've had is.
What about In-N-Out Burger? I'm going to get one of them.
That goes in and out.
Oh, really?
No, I'm joking. I've not had that before.
I've never had that before.
Yeah, really good.
Are you getting one in Dubai?
Is there one in Dubai?
Yeah.
In-N-Out?
Yeah.
Do you know, like, see in America, you know, when you talk about all the burger chains.
Whataburger?
Like,
that's good. Whataburger.
They're coasts, they're like area specific.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're state specific.
So, on like the West Coast, it's like, I don't know, I'm probably saying this wrong.
Whataburger, they don't have in certain states.
They don't have In-N-Out Burger, so it's like almost like a kind of like state by state rivalry.
California's
like, who's
got
In-N-Out.
Yeah,
but I don't think New York and that do. I don't think they've got In-N-Out Burger. Right. I don't think, I could be wrong, but yeah. Anyway,
interesting.
There we go. Here's some facts about burgers.
Running.
I'm going to go overrated purely on the current demand for everyone being a runner. And I'm, again, probably coming at this from a body composition standpoint because people choose or try to use running as a means to change their body composition. And in my opinion, it is suboptimal and largely useless to make dramatic changes to your shape. It's so popular right now, like insanely popular. And I think it's linked to the whole personal development world, and people are like, you know, self-improvement, I need to do running, I need to do all this. I think it's overrated. I done like a 12-week block where the goal was to get better at running, and I got better at running, and I don't enjoy it. Don't
Did you not
like
get
it.
The positive feedback loop that people are talking nah. about? The people are talking about the runner's high?
No. Nah.
I've never had that in my life. Nah. I remember being really...
I've had that running down a hill, doing a trail run before, and I was like, oh, that's amazing.
I've never had that before.
I was speaking to Nico Carrillo, you know him?
Yeah.
Thai boxer. I was speaking to him today, and I like mentioned something about trail run, like running down a hill recently. And he's like, it's like flying, isn't it? And I was like, and then he went, it's the closest thing you can get to flying. And I was like, well, being on a plane maybe is, but like, as a human being, like, obviously you can do these wingsuits and stuff. I was like, he's right. Cause like I've done trail running before. And that is my proper high because you're so fucking laser focused on not ruining your ankles and you're toppling down these hills.
You're in
that's
four.
A buzzer. I love that, to be fair. I should probably do that a bit more. Running in general, I think it's overrated, but I'm looking at it from a body composition standpoint. People don't, like a lot of people don't use it for that as well. I think it's...
It had its renaissance at the start of C19 lockdown.
Yeah.
Remember run 5, donate 5, share 5 or something like that?
Yeah.
And people were really getting into it. I ran a 5K.
Charity thing, you wouldn't have done it.
Give to charity.
Begins at home, I heard. I did a 5K at that point and I never continued it, and I think most people like that. But now it seems like everyone's buying the
fucking
vest. What are they called? Vaporflies?
I'm just gonna call out Ryan and Dale right now. I went to run with my best mates. When did we go? 3 nights ago. An 8K, right? An 8K is not endurance, it's a short run. Ryan, the two of them have just bought every bit of running apparatus you can buy. They showed up with everything represent 24/7. These tights,
no idea.
A UVU hat, these extortionate running shoes. Ryan, sorry if you're listening, showed up with a vest, one of the running vests, with a water bottle in it. I was like, you're doing 8K. Dale whips out a carb gel.
A mad camel sack?
For an 8K, so love you boys, but you have jumped on
this.
This is
my as well. You're being swept along. And if you continue doing that, fair play. And because I think anything that you do, you should try and work towards a form of mastery in it. And that's just how I'm wired. And it's how a lot of people that listen to a podcast like this one are wired.
Bobbit
you fapping. Want to get... Do not try and achieve mastery in... a masturbator. Do not try and master that. But right. I think you want to pursue... progress in something. Progress happiness, as you often say, David, or Tony Robbins might say it too.
That was me, is it?
And David that said it.
And these things are, if they're flash in a pan, same as high rocks, then you're not giving yourself the opportunity to get the really like best parts of these things from it. And I think running at the moment where people are just diving in, buying all the gear, maybe have no idea. If it's here today, gone tomorrow, I think it's overrated. If you find your passion for it and it gets you training and exercising more and looking after yourself, amazing. Equally, you've got guys like Goggins who use it as their vehicle for dealing with their demons.
I've never got that either. Maybe it's because I don't like necessarily pure need a mental escape, but I've training in general, cool. I've had some gym sessions that, you know, people say like that was my therapy. Like
I've
never felt like that, but like equally,
I've used it to shift my mood. So I've gone and I've trained, I've got a pump, I felt good, and I've gone back to a work block and been like, right, I've got away from whatever I was thinking about before, let's get into this. But it's not that, it wasn't
therapy. I've never felt that. Do you know one thing that is underrated about running? is sprinting.
I was about to say that you were going to say that, sprinting.
Sprinting, especially as you get older.
Yeah.
Because I think
it's good for testosterone
and retaining muscle mass.
But also, are you retaining muscle? But also, do you know what else is coordination?
Yeah.
Which is something that not a lot of people talk about. But I think, like, obviously, I've done a lot of sprinting in my time from like sports and stuff, and done a lot of like.
I think I'd be sprint
focused training. Oh mate, my sprinting was so I didn't get slower. Like that's I'm very awesome.
Were you
that.
Slow?
Was that?
Were you super slow?
No, I wasn't slow. No, but I've always been obviously
a bit 120 kilo.
A bit of a unit.
So let's put it in context. But yeah, I think that sprinting is massively underrated, and I think like what will piss a lot of people off is when you find out what like I was gonna say like proper sprint training is. There's a long rest period in between. Yeah. You know, you're really resting. You know. Depending on the distance, but you're talking like 3 to 5 minutes, depending on the distance you're running. But like from a coordination standpoint, as you get older, you know, coordination is massive because as you get older and you fall, falls become a greater risk to your health. So I just feel like there's a lot of benefits to sprinting.
Yeah.
So working it into your, to your, and you it doesn't have to be quote unquote optimal because you're not necessarily trying to get faster.
Yeah.
So like the ideal conditions for sprinting, you know, you're going to be fresh, you know, you're going to be going in there, say like a 48-hour rest period, you know, from any arduous lower body training, and then you go in fresh and you do a sprint workout. But you're not a pro athlete, just do it after your upper body session.
I do
you
think
know,
like
that kind of thing.
As much as I think it's overrated, I'm coming at it from a very specific angle. I think it should be something that's incorporated in most people's lives, or some form of cardio, like steady
state. Definitely, yeah.
And I never used to that until like probably the last 6 months. Don't get me wrong, I've always done bouts of cardio at certain periods in my life, but I think everyone should be doing it. And there's like run clubs popping up like everywhere, Kaizen, smashing it right now. Like
very much linked to HYROX. It's not competitive, it's community.
Because
if you're all doing HYROX, you kind of form together, you do simulations together. The run clubs are the same because people are starving for connection.
Yeah.
That I can't remember what podcast this was on. I don't know if it's been released, but I was talking to someone about like connection and loneliness, and somebody asked in a solo episode if I would do meetups, and I was like, surely you don't want to do a podcast meetup.
Yeah.
And I was like,
not with you anyway.
Yeah. No. Well, mad.
I was coming.
I said, yeah, of course not. You have to have big.
Did they mean meetups with us? Yeah, we'll come.
Yeah,
we'll come.
Exactly. But people, like, I was like, just DM me if you'd be interested in that. But I think the entry point to that would be like a Telegram or something like that.
Yeah.
Like 80 plus people been like, oh, I would want like some form of like networking with other people that listen to this podcast. And I was that's wild.
If I look at like the 12-week peak, which is largely the only thing that we do once a year that has a community, like we've had 380 people like register for all of the events we're in. Bear in mind, there's only 580 people doing the program. So like a huge majority are like wanting to come, and it's like it's
meet
Hillbox.
Like-minded people
it's
as Hillbox. Well though.
Yeah, it's a huge selling point from us from a program perspective, but and it is like it's not even like bullshit marketing. Like see the connections people are making it, things like the 12-week peak and things like run clubs and things like I think most people meet new friends through getting pissed, and I think actually having something where you're meeting new friends through doing something positive can only be a good thing.
Society's moving away from that. Oh, and yeah, I think if running's a vehicle for that, then crack
absolutely.
On.
That's why sports is such a underrated thing as well, I think, for adults. I mean,
find
a sport to go and whatever one you want to play. Obviously, I've played rugby my whole life, but like the amount of times I've seen guys come down to the rugby club that like have just moved to the area, and within a week, they've got a bunch of mates and they're out every weekend and they're out the house twice a week for training, and they're all day Saturday with the boys and they're just having the time. Like, we had a boy last season, chap the changing room door, it was pissing the rain, it was some mad guy from South Africa called Simon, and he's like, I'd like to play some rugby. And you're just like, aye, come on in mate. And then he's like, I've not got any kit. And we're like, right, cool, we'll give you, and then he got kits. So that's like the benefits of like finding those little pockets of like like-minded communities and stuff like
and
that.
That's missing when we're all behind
huge.
Our screens.
Yeah. Totally. And do you know what? I'm really shite at realising the value in that because I have always been a bit of a lone wolf kind of type, and I work on my own. I'm really enjoying my own company.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I go to things with like-minded people, I'm just like, this is class, I should do this more. Then I forget.
You just don't seek it.
I just don't seek it out. Yeah.
And then you stay with your same little group.
Same little group. Yeah, exactly. Or stay in my office with the curtain shut. The curtain shut. Because in the copy cave.
Blinkers on.
Noise cancelling.
Hormozy said we shouldn't have any windows in our offices, so that's becoming
that's one thing that I'm like, nah.
Not having
shut
it.
Shut up, man. He needs to take a day off, man.
Next up, based on something you brought up already, David, is intrant workout nutrition.
Overrated. No, unless you're training for over 2 hours, which the vast majority of people are not. Unless you're training with a huge intensity, which the vast majority of people are not, you don't fucking need intra-workout nutrition. You need to fuel yourself appropriately pre and post. But yeah, I can't actually think of anyone that I personally know that needs intra-workout nutrition.
Unless you're doing Fergus Crawley. Event. Fergus Crawley, there you go.
Because he does insane events. Other than him,
the people taking carb gels on 8K runs.
Yeah. Yeah, Dale, what are you doing, man?
Nice day.
Actually, to be fair, in his defense, he had it in his pocket and he's like, I'm going to try it. And I was like, why have you got that with you?
How many grams of carbs is it? Out of interest?
40 or something. Yeah.
Anybody that's listening to this just now that's seen The American Office and Dwight Schrute, is that I think that's the only thing I can think of right now, because Dwight Schrute walking about the office with carb gels and his camel sack thing on. That's Dale. What were we talking about there?
Intra-workout nutrition.
I used to train at the same time as a guy who used to eat a 6-pack of Petit Filou and smoke a joint during his workout.
That is brilliant.
Inside he would smoke?
They would go outside and smoke a joint and come back in.
In the rest periods?
Aye. And he used to like say train.
What kind of shape was he in?
He's actually in quite decent shape, but he was like well, obviously, a lunatic, because I've just told you he's expected for losing his workout. So, and you can infer from that what kind of guy we're talking about. No, he was like a mad, like, Westside fuckboy. So, right, like, he loved, like, Westside barbell. And, like, he would, like, have fucking bands set up and all that. And, like, his workouts would take, like, four hours and all that. And then, like, he would just chew the ear off you about Louis Simmons every chance he got. But I just always remember him coming in. He's got the same rank and pull out a 6-pack of Petit Filou and just start chomping on them.
I'd be
and,
sick. Like,
yeah.
Aye. I mean, Petit Filou.
Petit Filou's marketing was... They make you bigger and stronger. The wee German guy,
but for children's lunchboxes, not for powerlifters.
You ever remember
gym?
Rich Piana's arm workout?
That
intro workout. I'm sure, like everything you done, it was like a protein shake and a banana. So like every cycle of it you done, you had to keep doing
that.
Actually, makes sense. It was fucking 8 hours.
8 hours, exactly.
But yeah, most people don't need intro workouts unless you're training for over. Maybe over 90 minutes, but over 2 hours, certainly I'd introduce something. But again, most people don't train that hard that they need something like that.
Mm. Yeah, and people are maybe having like Lucozade shown training as well, thinking like, oh, it's electrolytes. You're like...
Yeah, to be fair, something like that that's so low, like so easy to digest, like I could, like I've used things like that before, largely because I like the taste of them, but something like that's fine, like really simple sugars, but largely I don't think people need them.
Yeah, if you're digesting anything that's too heavy, you put your gut into fight or flight when you're meant to be focusing on trying to be in a solid state.
I remember, this is just another random story about pre-workout nutrition. I remember we were going to play a cup final last season and we stopped off at the Green Welly, which is, I said that as if your audience don't know what Green Welly is.
Or me.
Or you. It's like on the way up to it's like a cafe on the way up to Oban, exactly where the final was. And two of the boys had two scones and jam with cream. And a roll and sausage before the game.
How close before the game?
Like
half an hour.
Close, man. Not half an hour, but like within 2 hours of kickoff. Within 2 hours.
Some people can just eat and like I'm like that. I can eat and digest and train. Like I can eat.
I can't do that.
So no, I could eat like a curry and then
really,
half an hour later I could probably.
That's impressive.
So yeah. I could eat and train. I couldn't eat and play.
Right. Okay.
I couldn't eat that kind of food and play. No way, man.
But then you're getting hit. So it's not like I'm doing squats.
What about when you were doing karate,
squat?
For example?
I wouldn't eat close to that, actually. But that was just out of like, not for any reason, I just didn't do it. But I can eat and then, I could eat and then run. I could eat like a proper meal and then do a run half an hour later.
I think I could do that, yeah. I don't think that would bore me too much, but I couldn't eat and play. No way, man. I'd spew my ring.
Next up, saunas.
Overrated for me.
Overrated, but also don't. Yeah, I enjoy it, but I couldn't. I actually couldn't tell you many of the benefits. I know there are plenty of them, but I actually looked up. I was in Palmady Starbucks the other day, and there was a sauna. Like I don't know what brand. I can't remember the brand, but I was like, that's mad that that's just there. Like, it was a sauna shop. I was like, fucking random. And Kirsty had mentioned 2 weeks ago. She's like, we should get a sauna for the back door. And I was like, I wonder how much saunas are. It's good. That'd be quite cool. Like,
did you go in the shop?
No, I just went on their website and there were 25 grand and I thought, fuck that.
It's like, a business expense.
Mental 25 grand in a sauna. They have these portable ones that you can put on caravans, take to be like cool as fuck. Like the branding was amazing, really cool looking company, but 25 grand to get a sweat on, fuck that.
Yeah, for me, the biggest benefit has been getting into a parasympathetic state and switching off. You can't take your, you can take your phone.
I just go over a hot bath. It's largely the same thing. And I have a lot of hot baths.
Do you want a hot bath?
The actual the benefits of them, to be fair, you need to have a very hot bath to get the similar benefit from a sauna. But again, Huberman prescribes, either one of those are a very similar effect if you get the bath hot enough. But
do you give yourself a big quiff with the bubbles?
Do actually.
Instead of a beard, because you've got a beard but you're getting hair.
I do, or I did.
Just stay with your quiff.
Yeah, I find the sauna is interesting because it's a chance for me to get off my phone as well.
Oh, right, okay.
Oh, I'll take my phone in. I have seen people do that and I'm like, what the fuck
are
you
doing? That's an addiction.
Take 5 minutes off.
Anything that allows you to get a bit of a break and switch off, I think it's
that's my favorite bath, because I quite literally go in a bath to go on my phone sometimes, because I'm like, right, I can clear my messages.
Well, that's helpful. It's, you've done it consciously at least. Yeah. Whereas I think for me, if I'm going in the sauna, I'm trying to relax, unwind. Obviously, there's an element of discomfort as well that you sit through, which is helpful to expose yourself every now and then.
There is like a who's got the biggest balls, aren't there? If you go into a sauna and
somebody's... We were speaking about this other week. We're in a Sunday evening, and if somebody comes in after you, you're like, I'll see if I can like wait it out before he leaves.
Yeah.
And like, it's like toxic masculinity, but like...
The other guy doesn't give a fuck. He doesn't even know what's happening.
Yeah.
I'm beating him.
There is no
some old dude.
There is no competition, but he's feeling engaged with it. But yeah, for me, I think they're overrated if you think it's going to radically change the game for you. But for me, for like me switching off, I really... like have valued it in the last little while as well.
I would never associated this when I was switching off.
And it's good socially as well. Like, so David Lloyd is probably like a good group of us that will go at different times.
Ooh, sauna club.
Exactly. That. We don't have a name for it. You've ruined it. We don't call it that, unfortunately. No. Next up, mobility workouts.
Overrated, man.
Yeah.
So overrated.
What would you do for your mobility?
Just get stronger.
Just get stronger and lift full range of motion.
Through full range, yeah.
No, like, there's some movements that you can do, obviously. And I honestly do think it's more of, like, a placebo effect. Like, I do certain, like, mobility drills, if you like, that kind of make my hips feel looser. Mm-hmm. Whether they are or not,
before you train.
Just before I train, it's more of a warm-up than anything. But I'm never going to take... I used to do a lot of mobility workouts. They'd take about 20 minutes. You are far better off jumping on an assault bike, my personal preference, and doing 20 minutes zone 2 cardio, like in terms of like an ROI for your time. Like, obviously, if you enjoy it, do it. But I just think they're massively, massively overrated in terms of like
kind of convoluted routines.
Yeah, and then it just, it just gets silly. You know, if you're watching some guy being like, right, now we're gonna like get out a club, and swing a club about. Like, what are you doing? Why are you swinging a club? Grow up, man. Like, what
you've got a big thing on this. What are they called? Onyx or something like that?
It's
Marcus Aubrey's brand on it.
Yeah. Do you know what annoys me about it? It's like, because then it leads into like these flow workouts. It's like, we're going to do a flow, so we're going to do a row. And it's like this, like, mace, and it's got like a gorilla on the top of it or something like that. And it's like, we're going to do a barbell row, and then we're going to do a squat, and then we're going to do a bicep curl with the same weight. How can that possibly be doing anything for you? If you can squat something and also bicep curl it, one of those things ain't adding up. And I don't know, I just think like you don't get a big ROI. I don't know if you've seen that with your like clients, and I think like if you've got mobility issues, then I think there's way better ways to get around it while getting a bunch of other benefits. Rather than just purely doing mobility.
I think about 5 minutes before every session.
That's just kind of warm up, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, that's
I think
more like a standalone workout. If you're saying I'm going to get half an hour to do mobility work, like, I think that's a complete waste of time.
Unless one of your pastimes is yoga or something like that.
I think it's overrated, and I think warm up sets are underrated. I actually think spending more time getting good at the movements is underrated. So like a big part of like what we'll do with a lot of people ask us when they sign up to any programs, can you send me like a stretch workout or something to help my flexibility? And I'm like, where are you inflexible? One, they never know. They're like, I'm just tight. I'm like, cool, where are you tight? My hamstrings. I'm like, right, well, cool, show me an RDL, perfect range of movement, whatever else. I'm like, you're not tight, like, you're fine. You're probably just weak, like, you're probably weak in that area
in the length and range with the weight.
100%. And I think like for a lot of people, they're like, but my squat depth is pish. I'm like, you're just pish at squatting. Like, it's nothing to do with actual mobility right now. Like, you've just not done very many squats. You're naturally going to be shit at it.
But just see with that though, see, like, just raise your heels.
Yeah.
That's my, like, just get a wedge under you.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have, I remember I messed myself up so much because I read the Supple Leopard book back in the day. And the big thing in that was you must have your feet facing completely forward.
I cannot squat like that.
Right, dead straight forward, and then grip the floor and create torque at your hips. And I was just like, and the thing is, I was doing a powerlifting program at the time, so like I was battering myself for like volume, and it was like Lane Norton's program, so it was like squatting 3 days a week, deadlifting twice, benching three times, and I was trying this dumbest fuck technique, and like I've got perfect range of motion for a squat when I've got my feet turned out a little bit and my gait's a little bit where stance a bit wider. So I just feel like for people that are really really suck at it, you're probably going to get a higher ROI. And by the way, I'm not a coach, so you know. Sue me. Yeah, I am. A retired one. Yeah. I just think you're going to get a higher ROI rather than do mobility work. Why don't you just do a squat with your heels raised and get used to that movement under load?
Yeah.
And then you can eventually, if you need to, take those wedges away, and you've got all this experience under the bar, or even as a goblet squat, there's going to be way more carryover, isn't there? Rather than being like, oh, look, I've been drilling my ankle mobility for 3 weeks now. And then it's like, okay, well, you're probably not going to be able to squat a bar on your back, or, you know, you're just going to be all over the shop.
Like, you haven't exposed yourself to what you need to.
You've not, the stimulus isn't there. I think it all comes back to stimulus.
Mobility stems largely from weakness, though. Like, people that think they're super immobile, like, ah, I can't move this, I can't do that. I'm like, well, you're really weak at this specific thing, get a bit stronger at that. Like, me and Adam have spoken about that at length as well. We done a kind of mini, wasn't a podcast, but we spoke on a, I think it was an Instagram live actually, about like not how useless stretching is, but the low return on that versus please just go and get strong in different movement patterns.
Get strong through different movement patterns in different ranges of motion, and you'll probably find that, oh, I can now hit depth because my hamstrings can handle the load at the bottom.
But one thing I will say is, see in terms of like different movement planes, so many movement planes get neglected in training. So that's why part of my warm-up's always like Cossack squats.
Yeah.
And I do them like
in the sagittal plane.
You're just got to move in different, because I think that's probably when people start doing that, they'll probably see a big ROI as well. And like what I mentioned before, like things like sprinting to improve your coordination, even a little bit of jumping here and there. I'm not saying you have to train like a professional athlete, but these things can be worked in fairly easily.
Yeah.
And the carryover you see to other movements that really matter to you is, you know, if you're training for body comp, part of your warm-up can involve a little bit of jumping, a little bit of movement in different planes. So when it comes to you like loading up a leg press and it's like your top set and you're going for it, it's like you've got that full range of motion, you feel comfortable and you feel strong.
I've done a bodybuilding style of training similar to you for 15 years, whatever else, and more recently, I think it was probably tail end of last year, I signed up to work with a coach, and it was quite literally, I was like, I think I just want to move and I just want to do different movements. I was like, I want to learn new things, I want to do new things. And any sort of tightness or what I thought was weakness or what I thought was immobility that I had or thought I had is gone. And I've done zero stretching. Initially, so like I always had really tight scapulas. Like I thought I had really, really bad overhead movements and really bad, or like it felt like that.
Yeah.
That was pretty quick. That was like 6 weeks. And like I'd done some fairly different movements, like sitting in the bottom of a squat and doing a shoulder press. Like that is honestly fucking brutal, by the way, if you ever try it. But just moving in different like planes of movement, and also just doing things with a bigger range of movement. So like in a seated row, for example, you're I don't know about now, but you have always been very like picture perfect form. But see, actually just allowing your scapulas to move and actually work into that range of
gap.
Yeah, and not actually using...
You're like round at the eccentric.
Full rom roll, phenomenal. Yeah, and like you feel great. Ever since doing that, I'm like, wow, I feel really fucking good.
Another thing I've done a lot of as well is like end range isometrics.
Yeah.
So like getting into a deep lunge and like hold it for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Just stay there, because again, you're really getting a lot of work into like your tendons and your joints around there, you know, like end range dips. So just like go in as deep in a dip as you possibly can. Still stay active, you know, don't just flop into
it. That is technically flexibility.
Stay there for, again, like build up to it. And even like dead hangs from the bar.
Phenomenal.
Things like that. I would honestly say, see if you feel up, like tight and stuff. Hang for a bar for a minute. You might not be able to do it, but hang for a bar as long as you can and come off, shake yourself off. Once the kind of initial kind of lactic's out, you'll feel great.
Peter Attia, you know, the
longevity.
Yeah. One of the biggest things for longevity is like how
it's your grip strength.
Grip strength on a dead hang is one of the biggest signs of like you're going to live longer.
It's a huge predictor.
Which is mental.
That and marriage. Really,
when you think of it, that in marriage, you and your wife.
I can hang for 10 minutes and we'll have to have 100.
I've got one more that I want us to wrap up on, and it's very fitnessy as well, and it's nasal breathing, which has gained popularity.
Mm-hmm. I actually can only breathe through one of my nostrils.
Was that an injury from karate?
Nah, or? I had a... what was the operation? Not a nose job, because my nose is fucking huge, but
you've had your teeth done, is that next?
That's next, yeah. Then here. then calves.
It's going to be a new man.
Yeah, I can only breathe through one nostril. So I've done, actually, I've tried a lot of the nasal breathing techniques. Like, I've taped my mouth when I've slept. I've used the tape before it was popularised. Actually, it was Eugene Thiel.
Oh, I used to in Dubai. Yeah.
Ganbaru used to have them. And then I remember wearing it. Everyone was like, what the fuck is that? And then 2 years later, Hormozy starts wearing them. Everybody's and everyone them. Has them on.
Yeah.
That doesn't have problems breathing. They are quite literally to open up your nasal passages for people that have problems breathing. They're not. Like, that is what they're for. They're not really for anything else. So I'm always laughing at these people that are, yeah, I can breathe fine. I'm like, why the fuck are you wearing that? There's little to no benefit. Anyway, nasal breathing, what's the book called? Is it Breathe?
Yeah.
I think it is Breathe. I've not actually read it. I've listened to a summary of it. That's how fucking lazy I am.
But did you get take much from it?
Tons of data on, like, why you should do it. There is quite a lot, but...
Do you have it built into your routine? I know Mr. Burns does. We're ready.
When I'm doing NSDR, I try to start breathing through my nose, and then 5 minutes later I'm like, so no, I can, because I can't actually do it, because it's such a conscious thing for me, and I actually don't get much
airflow
through my nose, so I find it really difficult. I've done some conditioning whilst only you've been doing that, yeah?
That's what I was about to bring up.
Yeah, I've done that, and fuck me, that is hard. And it is great for, like, regulating pace, because, like, Tom, my coach, would always say, you know, run, he wouldn't actually say, like, here's the pace that I want you to do. He says, run whilst nasal breathing and see what pace that is, because he says, you'll be slow or slower.
Yeah. And that's exactly why I do it, is to make sure, because I know when I breathe through my nose, so, like, I'll do, like, 2, sometimes 3 zone 2 sessions every week. But, you know, it's like, it's just, like, it's actually quite hard to pace yourself, and I can't be arsed with, like, a heart rate monitor. You know, I'm not really big on tech for fitness. It's just not really my thing.
Yeah.
So I'd rather just have something that I know is pacing me properly.
Yeah.
So, like, when I'm on the assault bike, like, nasal breathing only, I know for a fact, like, I'm in that zone 2 area. And then if I start, because I used to really struggle with it, and I'd feel like I'd start to be breathing through my mouth, you know, I literally felt like I was, like, suffocating. And that's when I knew I was kind of knocking the ass out the pace too much. So yes, a really good tool, I would say, in that. Like, I don't know too much about, like, the performance benefits or anything.
There's
like
a lot
about
it. About
the performance benefits of zone 2 cardio, and if that helps keep you there, then
100%. I mean, there's a lot of it changing the structure of your face and your jawline and things like that.
I've seen before and afters, and it appears to check out.
Yeah, same with these, even these jaw, you've seen these balls people chew on to fucking.
Do you know when my page
apparently
first,
there's some merit on those, so
when,
genuinely.
When
my page first grew on Instagram, that was one of the first, like, collabs that I got offered, and I was like, don't be ridiculous, that's absolutely mad. But if you train any muscle to some extent, then it should hypertrophy in some perspective. But I don't know if it's a muscle, but I've had quite a prominent jaw most of my life, but I don't know.
So is it, I've seen the balls.
So yeah, that's like for a people gag. That have a jaw like that, and then they chew them,
and then I've seen the gum.
Yeah.
There's like a real, you know, like
a solid,
like
gum.
Solid gum that you're like, you know, it's like 15 times stronger than or something like that. So I don't know. I've just seen the adverts for them, and all the guys giving it, you know, showing off the jawline and everything, but I don't know.
They just lost 10 pounds.
Yeah.
Well, that's a huge factor, isn't it?
But
your nasal breathing, Chris, is designed around performance?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Just building, like zone 2 cardio is just, like, one of the most overlooked. And do you know why people don't do it? And it's nothing. It's boring.
Yeah.
Like, so, like, I have.
What can you do during that? You can hold a conversation, can't you? That's what it says.
Conversational pace is what it should
be. Hold a conversation, or, like we say, like, breathe through your nose, or, like, be able to hold a conversation.
Could you get it from walking?
No.
Nah.
You need to be something.
No, you could if you're really unfit.
If you
great point.
Yeah, if you are massively unfit, definitely. But, like, for me, it's, like, on the assault bike. And I do find it boring, and, like, I've got maybe again.
Do you just listen to something?
Sometimes I watch things. Like, that's the thing is, like, it's not something I can get kind of up for a workout, because it's like, I enjoy this. Like, you know, I'm looking forward to this. This set or whatever. I can't get up to just sit on an assault bike. So it's like, sometimes I watch stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe that's a reflection on addicted to
our phones or attention spans.
Yeah. And you're probably right, but if it's the choice between the two, it's like, oh, I'm still going to get the benefits of zone 2 cardio. And if I've got a show on, or, like, even like a podcast or something to get you through.
One of the big time management hacks that I've learned over the years is bundling.
Yeah.
Put two things together.
Yeah.
And those two things aren't in contrast. In fact, they marry quite nicely. So let's crack on.
Podcast and catching up with friends.
Yeah.
Wonderful, David. Catching up with friends. Something
right now, I'm bundling. Exactly that. We'll do a catch up, weren't we? But gents, I've had tremendous fun. I'm sure the listeners have as well. If they aren't already connected with you, where should they head towards?
Instagram, dhat_mtn. I also have a fantastic email list. I don't know how you get there, but you just go to my Instagram.
Link in bio.
Link in bio.
Who writes those emails?
I don't know, man. I don't know, but he knows what he's talking about anyway. You can find me at Savvy Scholar. I always get nervous to say this because the first time I was on here,
Is that Savvy Scholar?
No, it's at Savvy Scholar Chris.
It's linked in the show notes anyway.
Yeah, it's at Savvy Scholar Chris. And then I've got an even better email list than David.
Yeah, I write his.
With his alpha smart.
Yeah, that's where you'll find me, Instagram.
Wonderful stuff. Thank you very much, gents. And thank you to the listener. I'll be back to speak to you all again very, very soon.